Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I am here to bring you an amazing show. So before we get started, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an advocate, be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. I know there's someone who needs to hear this message today, whether it's grandma, grandpa, cousin Eddie, Utsu, whoever it is, your roommate, your neighbor, go across the street to the guy who's watering his lawn. He needs to hear this information right now, and we need you to let him know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're doing what you're doing, I'm going to do what you need me to do, and that is to go ahead and introduce our first guest. Our first guest has been in business for quite some time, and his industry has seen a drastic change over the last few months. But because his experience not only working in this industry, but also assisting others as well, he's going to give us a new take on the event industry. I want to welcome Mr. Keith Willard from Keith Willard Events to the Roundtable Talk Show. Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you so much, Harry, for having me on the show. I'm excited. I mean, we're going to get to cover a lot of stuff today, and there's a lot going on in the world, especially now with the elections so close and the uptick. You know, the event industry has been hard hit in so many ways that I just don't think a lot of people comprehend just how horrendous it is right now out there for a lot of people in the hospitality industry.
Yes, I was talking and I try to focus on my guests, but I always tell people I see squirrels, so I get easily distracted. So I'm staring at all of your pictures. I have never seen a backdrop like that. That is so beautiful, so professional. I see all the weddings, the guests, the pictures. Yes. I'm not even getting married, but now I have to find a groom just so you can help me out.
Well, that actually has happened before. I've actually had to tell a client that, you know, she shouldn't get married because she's wanting to get married just for the wedding and not because she was in love with the person. So, you know, fast forward 6 months, yeah, they broke up. So, you know, sometimes it's important to listen to your planner, because your planner is going to be that person that is going to be your sounding board to make sure that, you know, you don't freak out on your family members and that the dreams actually come true, you know, because our job is to make sure that all the logistics and details are handled so you can truly be in the moment. And a lot of people don't understand that. They think planners are kind of an extra, you know, I'm going to get a planner because I have a little extra money. And usually a good planner will be able to cover a lot of their fees and just the savings that they get you from all the different vendors that they work with. And I say this all the time, you know, a wedding is a one-off. You're a one-off client of whatever vendor you're looking, let's say DJ. The DJ, of course, is going to charge you their premium amount. But as a planner, I've probably used that DJ 3 or 4 times. They want to be able to stay on my good side. So they're going to give me a 10 or 20% discount, which I then pass on to my clients. You know, so, you know, a lot of times I pay for myself. And then also I'm the president of NACE, the National Association of Catering and Events here in South Florida. And so it's a great organization that has obviously been on the front lines when it comes to what has COVID done to our hospitality industry here in South Florida. And, you know, there are so many people out of work that didn't have the ability to, you know, go for unemployment assistance, got some help from the government. But, you know, typically, you know, a lot of the vendors down here are W-9 employees, so to speak. You know, they're paid by job. And then all of a sudden, all that work dried up, and kind of March 13th is kind of our you know, drop dead date. Honestly, March 13th was the last time a major event happened here in South Florida, and since then it has literally been, what can we do to survive? Because we know if we can survive, then we're going to thrive, but we have to survive first, and that's been challenging.
Well, I think it's challenging for everyone. You know, this is the first time when it didn't just happen to one person, one group, one ethnicity, one country. This happened to everyone in the world, every industry, everyone has been affected. But we still look at other people and say, okay, what can we learn from you? When did you initially launch your business? Because you launched it with some pretty large clients and you've been in business for some time, Keith.
Yeah, so that, you know, I went through kind of a midlife readjustment, so to speak, because I did launch my company when I was much younger, and I was working all the time, constantly. And so then when I got into my mid-30s, all of a sudden I realized that, you know, I didn't really have a life. And mm-hmm. so, and I knew that I needed to, that this was going to be literally the last time that I would be able to make that adjustment to say, you know what, I'm going to just sell everything. I'm going to move and I'm going to reinvent myself, thinking I was going to get out of the event industry, mm-hmm. right? I was going to live on the beach. I was going to fish every day and I was going to, you know, work as a waiter and live the simple life. Well, if anybody that's an entrepreneur, and most of our people are, you know, they're obviously the leaders in their fields. As any of our panelists will know, it's like you get sucked back into your love. You just do. And, mm-hmm. and so that's exactly what happened. I was literally waiting tables, living the dream, so to speak, my dream. And they were doing a Halloween party. And so they asked if anybody would help with decorating. Well, of course, I ended up building a spider web that was self-supported over 5,000 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah, that was all built out of string. You know, only took 2 days to build, you know, nothing major. And then of course I got right back into the industry. The nice thing is that my first real job here in Florida actually ended up being at the Hyatt Regency Pier 66, which is kind of a classic hotel here in South Florida. And, you know, worked my way up through the hotel ranks and finished my career with the hotels as director of catering at Ritz-Carlton in Bell Harbor, which is one of the most exclusive Ritz-Carltons in the country. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that I had all the education that I needed from that side of it, and then started focusing back into my event planning company. And now I was armed with even more tools, because now I understood what hotels were having to go through, you know, food costs and all those percentages and labor costs. You know, there are just so many things that a hotel can really give a client, you know, and a lot of times it's a misconception that, oh, they can just throw in that extra hour of cocktail. You know, they really want to land the business. They can do that. Well, honestly, no. A lot of times they are running right at that percentage, and it's the executive chef that will get the hammer if his percentages go above 24%. So if it's food cost related, typically that's a harder negotiating point. But if it's like a free room and overnight, you know, those are costs that are already built into the overall hotel, you're going to probably get a better chance of doing that. And then of course got back into the business, and I've been very lucky because I've had a great mix of both social and corporate. Recently was Duty Free of America. They just went through a rebranding to 360. And mm-hmm. so I took care of those events and their rebranding. So that was amazing. That was last year. And then a lot of my focus has been now on NACE, you know, the National Association of Catering Events, our local chapter, our Greater Broward and Palm Beach chapter.
You have a lot going on, Keith. That was
I got a lot going on. I got a lot. Well, you know,
when people talk to me. That's the thing I like, though, when people talk to me, because people come on the show and they're like, oh my God, I feel like I was babbling. I'm like, I love the babblers. Not that you were babbling, Keith.
But the people thank
that
you.
Drive me crazy are the people who answer me in one word answers. You know, right. I'm like, I'm trying to support you. Like, do some shameless self promotion here. I don't want to pull teeth, but I got a question for you, Keith.
Yes.
You seem like a happy person.
I
have
am.
You heard of anyone who has a bachelor's of science in happiness?
No, but I love the fact that we have somebody on the panel that does, because I love that. Love that. I was so interested in hearing his story.
I am too. That's why I wanted to ask if you had heard about it. Our next guest, Mr. Jackson Kirchis, has a bachelor's of science in happiness. And not only does he have his BS in happiness, he is the only one in the world. Good morning, Jackson. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Sharifa. Excited to be here. So thank you for having me and having all of us and giving us a platform. Really special. So, but yeah, so yeah, thank you. Yeah. So we can jump into kind of the story. And, you know, I guess really I always start with a question, and I actually, you know, I picked this up from Martin Seligman, who's kind of the founder of positive psychology, which all that means is traditional psychology is kind of, you know, how do we get someone who's down here and bring them up to normal? And Martin Seligman started to ask, and at the time he was the president of the American Psychological Association, he said, well, how can we take someone who's already here, who's kind of at the average, and bring them way up, right? Kind of flourish. And so he'll ask people, you know, in kind of one word, you know, what do you want out of life? Right. And of course, you can say happiness or purpose, passion, whatever. Then he'll say, okay, in one word, you know, what did you learn in school? Right. And it's kind of, you know, reading, writing, math, science. And so it's not that those aren't important, right? But I think the point of education is really teaching us how to live and how to live well. And so, you know, kind of my sophomore year of college, I still studying economics, and I was obsessing over this question of kind of a major, should I get a master's, what should I do? And I started to think, well, you know, what do I want to learn just for the sake of learning, right? The rest of my life, what am I already studying? And I just kind of connected the dots with this, you know, this is way to study happiness. And so that day, you know, I enrolled in this program, started to create the major. And, you know, I've been trying to build that. And so really what it is, it's an interdisciplinary major. And so you kind of think, you know, all the different perspectives, what do they say about happiness? So you could say in neuroscience, right? How does the brain work? What are the kind of physiological, you know, mechanisms behind happiness, all the way to fine art, maybe. So what does a, you know, poem or a painting have to say about the human condition, right? And so and integrate all of those into a very nuanced understanding of how to live a happy life. And so since then, you know, I've had some success trying to just, you know, comment, you know, add, contribute in the space. So, you know, actually this fall, I've piloted a few programs for kind of happiness in higher education. So that's an area I've been focusing on because, like I said, I think the education piece, you know, those skills for happiness at a young age, very important. Gave my first, you know, event with kind of sobriety and happiness to a halfway recovery services center. And then finally, the one I'm very excited about this spring, I'll actually be teaching a kind of happiness 101 course at the University of Alabama. So yeah, really, really excited about all that. And I think especially with COVID right now, you know, I almost think of it as kind of a paradigm shift in that, you know, we're starting to see that a lot of us, we just don't have these coping skills. You know, we don't really know how to protect our own well-being when circumstances come up. And so I think that, you know, much like there are these paradigm shifts, you know, in our culture, whether it be you think like the Civil War, World War II, right, where you see, you know, racial kind of equality change with Civil War, and then World War II, you know, is more like women's rights and everything. I think this could be a real wake-up call to say kind of a turning point for that, you know, happiness education and making sure that we as a society are empowering our people to know how to live a happy life. So again, we can go more into all that, but I'll give these other great folks some time to kind of to share what they're here for.
I love it when people try to direct. Everybody's, oh, no, I'm still on you, Jackson. I got
okay, all right. Yeah, this is your
add.
Show, so.
I got things well, that I want to know, right? Okay. And because this is the Roundtable Talk Show and I am who I am, I ask questions, you know, the hard questions sometimes, because I believe that the people who are watching or tuning in, this is what they might be thinking. You know, so the way you explained it, the happiness in the mind and the neuro, I love all of that. But if as a parent, my children are 23 and 26. And if they came and they're like, Mom, you know what? I want to get a bachelor's in happiness. I don't know if I would be like, you know what I mean? Serious?
Oh, of course.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, because the parents think, okay, how is that going to help you 40 years down the line and build a family and stuff like that? So what would you say to a parent like me?
Yeah, no, I would say that's totally reasonable. And I think I would maybe question what you were thinking as a parent if you didn't, you know, give a little objection. So what I tell people is, look, hedge your bets. So I also, you know, have a bachelor's, kind of a double major, and going to have economics, right? And so, you know, that traditional background as well, I've worked with, you know, Fortune 500 companies, you know, large companies, PwC, you know, small kind of nonprofit management consulting firm as well. And so as much as I love being, you know, all in invested in your mission, I would say it's important to hedge your bets, right? So does everyone need a bachelor's of science in happiness? Probably not. I'd probably think it's better off maybe, you know, get your bachelor's in marketing, business, engineering, communications, whatever you want to do, and maybe add in some psychology, add in, you know, a specialization or a program or initiative on well-being. And so, yeah, and much to your point, it was a much easier conversation with my parents when I said, hey, I want to major in happiness, but also economics.
Yeah, see, that was a trick question. You passed, Jackson, you passed. That was the parent test. Because if you just told me something else, I would have been shocked. Keith?
So Jackson, do you think that Americans are predisposed to be happy, or are we a more of a pessimistic society?
That's a great question. So I think there's a few ways to look at this. One of the most interesting is actually a book called The American Paradox. And basically what the researchers looked at is they just kind of looked at the trends in happiness in America particularly. And that's where the title comes in, The American Paradox, is because we've had so much progress, think about economic progress, kind of technological progress, material progress. But what we've seen is kind of a systematic, you know, kind of decrease in happiness and well-being. And I think that the main reasons that kind of come out of that study and the other studies is because most of that progress, like I said, has been material. And so, you know, I don't want to speak, you know, poorly, I love being in America, whatever, but the reality is a lot of that progress has been kind of material focused, GDP, consumerism. And what they actually find in that study is that for the average person, the amount of close friends that they have has decreased, right? And so I think that it's really been, a lot of it's an issue of values, right? Where, you know, the U.S. does some great things with like entrepreneurship, you know, progress, you know, economic growth. But what comes with that, the danger is that we tend to really value that type of quantitative growth as opposed to more the qualitative growth. So spirituality, yes. Relationships. And so to answer your question, I think we're very blessed that we have, I think, of the prerequisites of, you know, freedom, you know, policy, you know, basic economic health, the majority of us, right? But we may be lacking as a culture in some of those values, particularly social connection, spirituality, things like that, which play a huge part in happiness.
I agree. I was reading an article yesterday, and it came up on narcissism. And so many people are talking about this person is a narcissist, this person is a narcissist. Like, to me, I'm so tired of hearing that word. I think I don't like labels. You know what I mean? Because when you label somebody, you can put them in a category and then kind of avoid them. But what they were saying is part of the reason that there's an uprise in narcissists is because our society now is using more words like I and me as opposed to us and we. So that's the direction that we're going through as a people. So of course, Jackson, I'm going to come back to you, but one of the things that we talk about when we talk about ways to be happy is actually the arts. So we have our next guest is the president of Accent Dance NYC, and she has a family who is full of the arts. So maybe it's one of the ways as a society that we can be happier. I want to go ahead and introduce Miss Andrea Ziegelman. Good morning. How are you?
Morning. Thank you so much for having me. And it's so great to connect with all of you. And thanks for this platform. I think we need this now more than ever. I was a lawyer for 30 years, representing children in divorce cases and family cases. And so being an advocate was part of what I do. But as some of you were talking about, you know, you end up sometimes going back to your roots, and the love of dance for me was big, and having that in my life and finding happiness and passion and feeling good about myself, no matter what, you know, dancing around and feeling that's me, I can express myself. So I went back to that. And in the last 4 years, given that everything's happening in our society, it became particularly important for me to give back, to go into public service. So I formed this charitable organization. We're small and we bring multicultural dance education and performance initiatives to children who need it the most in the South Bronx and in Lower Westchester, and places where children don't have the opportunities that I had, you know, where they really don't, their school budgets don't provide for the arts. They don't have, you know, parents who can afford to give them arts education after school. And I felt as a child that this was the thing that I really felt gave me a sense of self-worth and happiness, as we were talking about, Jackson. And you know, that it's so important to give all children. All children deserve positive, uplifting experiences. So I wanted to go into those places that were hardest hit by poverty in the South Bronx, by economic strife, by racial injustices, by inequities in education, and go to those places, yes, as a white upper class, you know, woman with a group of multicultural artists who, you know, could speak to the children and really where they could see themselves in these artists and say, you know what, there's hope for me too. Look at them, they're having happy, joyous lives. They'll talk about during lecture demonstrations how they came out of depressing situations. We have stories of hip hop dancers who, you know, lost parents as young children and found dance as a way to overcome depression. We have a tap dancer who's very inspiring, who talked about being homeless for a while and then making his way into, you know, finding a career. And these children, some of them who live in temporary housing, would raise their hand and say, do you feel like a family when you dance, you know? And other uplifting stories where I felt like we were making a difference. And so now more than ever, during this period of time of so much, so many injustices, and COVID has really laid bare the inequities in our society more than anything. We see it now in places like the South Bronx, you know, they have very high rates of infection and other things that now we really need to be doing our part. So
yes,
I really appreciate everybody's passion here and energy, because we need to keep that. And I feel like I need to keep that going for the children and keep programming going. So thank you for the opportunity to do this, because there's a synergy when everybody gets together and talks about what we're doing to make society better, notwithstanding all of these things that are going on. And, you know, to Sharifa, to you making this pivot, trying to be involved in politics and then doing other things, you know, we just do what we need to do to make a difference. And that's really impressive, all of you, you know, well, what you're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's very impressive what you're doing. A couple of things stood out to me. Number one, when you said, yes, a white woman is in the streets in South Bronx, I wouldn't have thought to even wonder, because I would have said, you know what, whoever has the ability to give back, whoever has the ability to make the change, that should be the person who actually is going out there and doing it. And then you also said, you know, we're small, and just from a business consultant marketing perspective, I would take that sentence and that phrase completely out of your introduction, because even if it's just you, and it may just be you, because that's what we deal with as entrepreneurs. We're like, we have this business, we have the company, but at the end of the day, as Sharifa, it's basically just Sharifa Hardy. So I don't apologize for being small. I don't notice I'm being small, because one of the things that I like to think about is, what motivates me is that scene in Forrest Gump where Forrest is walking and then all of a sudden he has a million people behind him, but they didn't start with him. You know what I mean? He started out by himself.
Mm, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I'll delete that from what I say, but you know, I think it's the honest broker in me. I'm not much of a self-promoter, but I do believe in and passionate about helping kids. So that drives us and drives our whole group. You know, we're a collaborative of friends who together really believe in this mission. And, you know, that's what you just need is good people that believe in a mission and a passion about it. And you have different skill sets and you come together and you try and do something good for society. So I feel like now more than ever, this is a time where people are paying attention to that. Thanks to our president, who's made it very clear to all of us that we got to like change things around and really help others. So I'm, yes, you know, it empowers me, and hopefully that can pass on to the kids.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things I learned from running from city council is that it's not up to one person. Again, mm-hmm. That's why I love the roundtable talk show. It's not up to one president, one governor, one mayor, one city council person. It's up to all of us, each of us individually, to be the change that we want to see in the world. And I'll come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is definitely being the change that he wants to see in this world. One of the things that we're going to talk about, his passion for helping people, which we also talked about on this show, because if not, we have people who are suicidal, depressed, and being National Suicide Prevention Month is coming up. we also have another expert on happiness. And I don't know what it is. I always tell people it's not me in any form or fashion. God makes it happen. He brings it together. But I always see similarities. I always see a core. I always see a theme that just so happens to run through each of my guests. Mr. Brian Highfield is an expert on happiness as well. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me and bringing on such wonderful guests.
You are so welcome. What did you think about what Jackson had to say about his bachelor's in science?
I completely agree. And something to note is that we have about 400 plus years of psychiatric history on negative emotions. Mm. You know, we know how to diagnose depression, anxiety, and all this research on that. But did you know that positive psychology, the field of it, is less than 30 years old? We have less than 30 years of research on the positive emotions versus 400 years of research on all the negative emotions. So it's about time, right? And so that's what's driven me is really sharing a lot of discoveries that I've made, not only in research, but in myself and through my own transformation as a child. I was depressed. I look back, I would say I was depressed. And what was scary is I liked being depressed. And that sounds
like being depressed.
That sounds weird, doesn't it? I liked being depressed because it was.
It didn't.
Easy.
I'm sorry. We're gonna have to slow down because certain people. I need to interrupt every now and then because it doesn't sound weird to me. It sounds crazy. That's what it sounds like. But when you start talking about mental health issues, that's what people, you know, it's the way you think. It's your mindset, not just weird for somebody to want to be in or like being in this situation.
Absolutely. And so and unfortunately, it's probably is common because it's easy to figure out and think about what's going wrong in our lives. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to do that, to sit back and make excuses why your life isn't perfect, why you're not happy, and find those reasons of what things, why you're not getting the job that you want to, why you can't afford the car that you want, why you can't meet the person of your life. And you're coming up with excuses. And a lot of it has to do with your own view of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I was as a child, is I was coming up with excuses to the point where I'd lay down at night and be like, okay, why isn't my life going the way I want it to? And I started picking and choosing all these reasons and thinking about them each and every night. And I realized that that was forming a habit and I actually enjoyed that. And then all of a sudden that scared me. Mm-hmm. I said, that is a path to somewhere I do not want to go. And so it was almost a cold turkey decision. It was simple as a decision to say, you know what? It's probably just as easy to figure out what is going right in my life. What do I have to be grateful for? And that's what I started doing. And over the next probably 10 years after that, I started really identifying principles that really helped us look at the glass half full. What is going right in our life? And so I put those principles inside of a book, and I came to a realization that a lot of people are chasing happiness. Mm-hmm. And the goalposts are always moving. And so it's a race you're never going to complete. And so I've kind of redefined happiness in a way. A lot of people, are you redefining happiness? And I thought first, no. And then I thought, actually, I kind of am. Because as I point out in the book, is happiness comes and goes, but fulfillment lasts a lifetime. And there's a difference between happiness and fulfillment. Mm. And so that's what I want people to understand is, when you understand what fulfillment is and how to build that up in your life, you're going to be happy much more often, because fulfillment is kind of like that foundation. It's the baseline. It's the line you cannot cross. You built that up. No one can take that away from you. And then your happiness is just the emotions that you feel as you go through life. And as it's been pointed out here, I mean, COVID has thrown a monkey wrench into all of our lives. And as Jackson and others have pointed out here, we need to figure out how we can better cope with when things go wrong. And one funny thing I see these signs a lot in stores. You see the signs that say, hey, we're all in this together.
Yes.
And I have to chuckle sometimes because I'm like, is it supposed to make me feel better that everyone else is just as miserable as I am right now.
Yes, it should. If we're all in this together, because one of the things that I've noticed and why I love this show, and I never thought it would be like that, is I saw so many people who were going above and beyond just to help other people, just to be there for other people. I had one show where this lady said that she saw this other lady who wrote this letter, passed it out to all of her neighbors in her neighborhood. And it basically said that, hi, this is my name. If you need anything, contact me. I'm here, especially senior citizens. I'll go out or whatever. But the interesting thing she said was that she did not get one person who called her and asked her for help or asked her for anything. However, she received several phone calls with people who said, hey, we've never met. I didn't even know you were my neighbor. That was cool of you to introduce yourself. So you have so many people who are just coming together to say, you know what? We are all in this together. How can I help?
Yes, and that is, those types of actions and those types of attitudes is what we need more of. And mm-hmm. It just takes one person like that that can inspire so many others to take action like that. And that's what people don't understand. And I call that one of the superpowers in my book is just giving a simple compliment or reaching out and connecting with somebody in the simplest of way can have a huge impact on that person. But also it's contagious. It can spread from that person to person, just like the virus is spreading, right? We can also spread the positivity around and the hopefulness. And that's what people need right now in this epidemic.
Yes, absolutely. Jackson, I would love your comments or your thoughts on what Brian said.
Yeah, of course. I think Brian's spot on. And kind of that point of happiness versus fulfillment, it's really interesting. It speaks to the kind of nuance and complexity of our field of kind of happiness and well-being. Because one of the most interesting things I think about, like you touched on, kind of that emotional day-to-day happiness versus kind of the broader fulfillment, that's something I actually try to look at as well. And that comes from Daniel Kahneman. He wrote Thinking Fast and Slow. And he kind of points out really interesting how those two often kind of clash. And so when you think about it, he says, you know, there's within all of us this reflective kind of life satisfaction, how happy am I with my life versus how happy am I in my life? And so I think that it's kind of, you know, both are important. You have to integrate those to live a life well lived, right? We think about maybe you go to a concert for 2 hours, have a great time, you love it. And then at the very end, you get in a fight with your friend or something. And so you have 2 hours, the experiencer, right? Of pleasure, of happiness, whatever you want to call it. But then your reflective self colors the event as bad. And so I think that, much to your point, it is important to distinguish between those two, with kind of that hedonic, affective, emotional state happiness and kind of the reflective happiness or fulfillment. And so I think that's spot on to look at both of those and how can we integrate them? Because there is, I think, a common mistake of just thinking all, you know, pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. But the truth is, like you said, pleasure is kind of the sister of suffering, because, you know, the moment you have it, you feel amazing, and then it goes away. And, you know, it's that cycle. So it's a very, complex, interesting field.
I like complex, interesting conversations. Yes. Yeah. And so this thing tends to be happiness, but yet we still have a theme, because take Keith. Keith is with people when they're at their happiest. You know, they have this idea in their mind of what that's going to look like. I remember when I got married, leading up to the wedding, I kept telling everyone, especially my mother-in-law, I was like, this has to be perfect. This has to be perfect. If anything goes wrong, I'm going to just die. I'm going to cry. And so my whole wedding happened. My whole wedding reception happened. And so we're at the house visiting. And I'm like, I am so happy nothing went wrong. Only to find out there were about a million things that went wrong. Absolutely. And everybody basically hid them from me.
Well, and that's actually a big part of my job that I said before is that, you know, I having to control people's emotions throughout the day. It's not just, you know, when they're getting ready. It's not just when they're walking down the aisle, but you need to make sure that their day is going perfect all the way to the moment they go into their car and leave. You know, so though all of that is built into kind of their memory, and their memory is really what's going to gauge their you know, happiness later on. But one of the things that I wanted to bring up and something that we just talked about on my show called Behind the Veil with Keith yesterday was mental health and wedding planning during the age of COVID. And the fact that people are mourning the loss of the anticipated experience. It's not just the fact that they're having to move their wedding, but they had all these dreams going on in their head. Like, I can't wait to be with all my girls and have my makeup done and walk down the aisle. And now that anticipated joy has been taken away. So it's not even just about the loss of the wedding. It's the loss of that moment that, you know, that they had already built up in their head. And so as a planner, my job is also twofold, to be part-time psychologist, even though I'm not.
I saw that. I could tell.
But not to, you know, not that I'm trained in that world, but also to make sure that I'm the rock to say, look, that dream is still going to happen. It's just going to happen, you know, in 6 months or a year, but it's still going to happen. So yeah, it's interesting because all of us are kind of peddling in happiness a little bit, you know, and I love that because my job is to make people happy in with whatever they are, you know, celebrating. Mm-hmm. And it's rough right now to tell people. Like, I have a wedding on Friday that we moved from this huge 250 person wedding at the W to 25 people in their backyard. And the joy is still there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a bank account that has joy. And if you withdraw too much, there's not going to be any more joy in there. Joy is unlimited. And I say this to my brides all the time, revel in the happiness, roll around in it, share it, because it's not going to run out. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about smaller events, a lot of times they mean more. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have 250 people, do you really care that all those people are at your wedding? Right. Probably not. You know, so when you're talking about 25 people, those people are the people that you really count on, that you really love, that you really want as part of your special days. So yeah, I'm learning a lot actually with all these three guests. And honestly, when I was reading over their bios, I thought, what the hell am I going to talk about?
Yeah, but it all works together. That's the magic of the show. Everybody's like, I don't know. I remember one show that stands out to me because I get nervous sometimes. People don't know, but I do get nervous, especially when people are too quiet, Jackson. I didn't mean to point any fingers, but it makes me nervous because then I don't know what I'm dealing with or what they're going to say. And I had this one lady one time, and she, to me, felt so corporate, and she kept giving me yes or no answers prior to the show. And then there was another lady on the show who she suffered from mental illness, and she wanted to share her experience. So I got this lady who suffers from mental illness, this corporate successful lady who I'm scared is going to get afraid of the lady with mental illness. So I'm like, I have absolutely no idea how this show is going to go. So the lady with mental illness starts talking and sharing her experience. And all of a sudden the other lady is like, my cousin suffers from mental illness and it affects our family. And then they just started talking for 40 minutes. And I was like, great show. So it's always a thing. Even look at Andrea. I love how Keith said peddling happiness. One of the things I'll, you know, because my friends will tell you, my friend and Yvette, especially, that I hang out all the time, you guys will love her, is like, they know, like, I like to shop. I like to do things. And I'll say, I'm not happy broke. I'm not happy not having any money. So it's the same experience when Andrew is out with her nonprofit and there's poverty. How can people be happy in that? So you have to come in and change that environment in order for those people to be happy. Would you agree, Andrew?
Yeah, I think that it starts with, especially with children, self-worth. Mm-hmm. You know, and what we're trying to do is, instead of external happiness or things that we typically may think of as making us happy, it starts with each child feeling that they're, you know, they have self-worth, that, you know, you build their confidence, that they're not being judged, that they can start to feel creative, that they can start to express themselves. These things are internal. And even in a wedding or whatever we're doing, it's all about, it starts with what's inside each of us. So we look at each child and how to tease that out and make them feel like, you know, they're worth something. They have something to say. They can express themselves, and that their cultures that wherever they come from are rich. And, you know, our work is about diversity and about bringing cultures together and celebrating differences, you know, that we all have something. And when we are in the Bronx, we talk about, look, this is the center of so much culture. Hip hop started there, you know, salsa, there's so much richness. And so we tell the children, look, it's, you're surrounded by it. You have wonderful music, you know, like, you know, really tap into that. And it can be very transformative, but it starts with each child feeling good about themselves. And, you know, we talked earlier about how it's important to, yes, have skills, hard skills, math and science, but children learn best when they feel good about themselves, and we build up their confidence and their creativity. Then they can go on to do many things. I mean, I went on from a dance background as a child. That's what I wanted to do, but I went into the law because I felt confident. I felt like I could make a difference. I felt like I could express myself, and it gave me discipline and an outlet, a creative outlet. Then you go and you do whatever with it. So I think it starts with that, with each child, and you go in, you know, and for me, going into a place and bringing that out of each child, everyone should have that opportunity to find happiness in school, you know, like to have positive, uplifting experiences there. So we go in there because that's where it starts. If you wait until you have, you know, you're an adult to say, oh, now I want to be happy and joyful. No, it needs to start when they're, you know, when you're kids.
Right. And there's a big movement right now to get that incorporated into the schools, which is awesome. Exactly what Andrea is talking about and what she's seeing with her kids and what she's experienced. Yeah. There is so much research to show that when you take the young child in school and teach them things about self-worth and mindfulness and do some of these exercises, and it doesn't take a lot of time, by the way, that they show that their grades improve. They feel better about themselves. They become better contributors to a society and just better human beings in general. And so there's a big movement to get that incorporated into schools.
Well, and Brian, earlier you brought up core values. And one of the things that, you know, we just discussed on the other show is core values and implementing those core values, not just in the adults, but also the children. And I think Andrea just touched on that same thing, is building those core values so you have a base for your happiness. Is that where you're going, Andrea?
Yeah, no, it is. It's about starting when you're young. And if you wait, it's too late. You know, I mean, I'm not saying like it's, you can't do it, but I think that you need to have that when you're young and have those positive, uplifting experience to feel hope when you're young, no matter what your situation. And to know that, you know, you're worth it. And I think that we go to places where children may not feel that way, or they're, you know, society tells them they're not really worth it. And so we want to go there and say, you're beautiful. You have so much to offer. We want to see you express yourself. You know, children don't have those outlets. They need more of that. And yes, Brian, it's true. There's so many studies about this. So when arts budgets are slashed, you know, or taken away, or they were never there to begin with, I start to wonder, like, why? Like, in order for the children to do well in other subjects, this is going to help them a lot. There's a lot of studies about that. And then they're going to go out and have, you know, good lives outside of school, but it starts there. It's a
big problem. And then of course you throw in social media, and then everybody starts comparing their lives to other people. And again, I'm going to go back to weddings because this is what I know, you know, I try to tell all of my clients, please do not compare your wedding to anybody else's, because your wedding is yours and it will be special because it's yours. You may not have the same, you know, chairs or candles or florals, but why would you? Why would you want to repeat something else? And why would you want to even compare yourself? And I think that's kind of important for kids and even us as adults, is to stop comparing our lives to other people, because, you know, my life is incredible because it's my life, you know, and I look at Jackson and I look at Brian and I look at Andrea and I look at Sharif and I think these guys all have incredible lives and have done so much. Why would I want to try to compare myself to them? I want to revel in your success as much as I revel in my success.
So how do you bring out the individuality? Would, you know, the the individual creativity in the context of a wedding, so that people are really, you're drawing out their self-expression in this very intimate personal expression of who they are and their love for somebody else. So
well, it takes,
how do you draw that out so that you're not, it's just not about, oh, you can do this or that, but it's really about trying to tease out from an individual who they are and then have it expressed through this celebration, just like we try to bring, tease out of children what's inside of them. So how do you do that in the context of a business?
Well, you start with listening, obviously, and that's what, you know, a lot of people are, you're watching the show is listening. And I think that, you know, Jackson, I think the fact that Jackson was able to even, you know, learn and get a degree in happiness is incredible. And I, you know, and I know that listening is a big part of my business. And I wanted to find out, Jackson, is listening a major component of what you do? I mean, how much do you have to listen, or do people expect you to teach all the time? Because, you know, you're supposed to be the master of joy, so to speak. You know, do you also need to also listen to, you know, increase that knowledge base?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that, yeah, I mean, listening in the sense of, you know, especially learning, right? So I can listen to audiobooks, whatever. So in that sense, you know, learning, you know, is really a huge part of what I do, you know, especially at a relatively young age. I mean, I'm still need to be in that knowledge accumulation phase. And so I really think about my duty and my work is really taking, you know, the stack of books right here, 10 hours of audio tapes, whatever videos, all right, digesting all that, synthesizing it, and then condensing it and giving it to people, you know, in a very practical short form, right? So that's part of listening. I guess the other side of that, I think, you know, and Keith, you're kind of a master of this in practice more than theory, which I really respect, you know, is that, you know, listening in the role of communication. And so kind of an area of positive psychology is kind of this positive communication. I think appreciative inquiry might be the technical name for it. But they really look at, you know, how can you use things like listening, active listening, and, you know, change your kind of the principles you use to communicate with other people to have more effective and kind of more, you know, positive communication, right? And so listening and the way you even construct questions and, you know, help guide people around their thinking, listening is a huge part of that. So
important. I think listening is becoming a lost art with a lot of people. I mean, we should practice active listening a lot more. Keith, you mentioned social media, and I think that may be contributing.
Brian, because we are coming down. We got about maybe 12 minutes left. I was enjoying it. Yes. See, that's what I'm saying. An hour later, we're going to all be old friends. But I wanted to come back to Brian because Keith mentioned social media. And one of the things that I've learned or I believe is that because of social media, there are so many more kids who are suffering from bullying in school and in their lives. And one of the reasons is before social media, when kids went to school, if they had a problem with someone in their school, that was it. You know what I mean? You may have had a problem at lunch, but you could go home, you could live your life. You didn't have this kid bothering you at 3 a.m. or telling all your friends or posting negative things about you. You might have had to deal with them in a classroom for a couple of hours. But when people are tormented 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and other people are putting out messages and other people are sharing that message, and there really isn't a way for them to get away from it, it affects them so much more. I want to talk, I would love for you to respond to that, Brian, but also talk a little bit about the National Suicide Prevention Month that's coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great segue to my shameless promotion for my book, which is titled Bazooka Proof. So Bazooka Proof is about building a resilient mindset, building up mental toughness, and how to deal with stressful situations. And bullying, of course, is very stressful. It's very affects us very, very deeply emotionally. And there's some principles outlined in this book that for all ages to how to deal with stressful situations, building up that resilient mindset quite a bit. And, you know, tying this into getting more perspective of things. Marcus Aurelius, one of my favorite quotes is he says, everything you hear is opinion, not fact. And everything you see is perspective, not the truth. And this is why a lot of people tend to believe opinions of others versus, you know, really going through a check. Is that really true? Do I really, really believe that? And so if we hear something from a bully about ourselves, you know, are we believing what they're saying, or are we understanding that that there's something deeper going on with that person? It's really more about them, not about me. And if we start to visualize things that way a little bit, what's happening in that microcosm of a bullying situation, coming to the understanding that that's about them. They've obviously got the issue. It's not me with the issue here that they feel they need to lash out to build them up. They must have something going on at home that's causing this behavior, and coming to that realization and running through that gut check. So suicide prevention month, I actually think it was last month in September. Okay. When that was. And with COVID and everything, the fear was suicides were going to go up. And so far the data has shown that is somewhat true. We have seen an increase in suicides. In fact, I think the rate is comparable to we haven't seen it since the beginning of World War I right now with that. And and suicide is something, I wrote an article on this, I haven't published it yet, but it's something I really struggled to understand it. Really struggled to understand how someone, and again, I'm coming from a position of positivity now in my life. I used to be depressed, never got to a point where I even contemplated suicide. But just recently, I've lost two colleagues to suicide.
Oh, wow.
Complete shock. Out of the blue. And so someone asked me, hey, Suicide Prevention Month's coming up. You want to put something together about that? And I'm like, you know what? I don't understand it myself. I really need to dig into some of the research and understand this more. And what I've learned is that people that are contemplating suicide are experiencing excruciating negative emotions. Mm-hmm. And suicide to them is the answer, is the only answer. It's kind of, they equate it to someone being diagnosed with a terminal illness. It's inevitable that they're going to die. And people who are contemplating suicide view it the same way. It's inevitable that I'm going to commit suicide. And like I said, my two colleagues, I wasn't real close to them, but it was a complete shock. But there are signs. There are a lot of signs, and often we miss those signs that people have. They may be using phrases like, well, if I ever see you again, mm-hmm. you know, things like that, that may be subtle, but we got to pick up on those little things. Or they may be looking for a way. They may be looking for a way to commit suicide. We've got to pick up on those things. There's lots of little signs, but while we have time, I want to mention the suicide prevention hotline right now for all your listeners. It's 1-800-273-8255. And so if you are even have a remote thought of that, you've reach out for help. Anybody, a friend, call the hotline, a minister, someone, a counselor, anyone out there, and just express. And most people, I forget, most people, it's a very high percentage, do reach out in that way. And we're just not picking up on the signals and the signs of that. And so going back, tying that back to bullying, that's a big, big driver right now with a lot of youth suicides right now is this bullying epidemic that we're in.
Well, it's not just youth, it's adults too. I mean, one of the things that we're seeing in the wedding industry is that because people are, you know, have been focused on that amazing day that's coming up, you know, and then it gets moved, all of a sudden that platform that they were living on basically gets pulled out from under them. And, you know, shameless plug, you know, my Behind the Veil show that we do every Tuesday is an outlet for brides and couples to have a place to get knowledge about their wedding and hear from these experts. And again, we talked about mental health and wedding planning during the age of COVID because we're in a brand new world. It's mm-hmm. a really difficult world to navigate. And sometimes just having a show like Sharif's to be able to listen and go, you know what? I'm not alone. There mm-hmm. are other people out there dealing with this, and it is okay not to be okay.
Yes, I definitely appreciate that and what you said as well, Brian, and providing us with that number. Can you give us the number one more time, please?
Absolutely. The Suicide Prevention Hotline Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255.
Yes, so please, if you need to talk to someone, please call a friend, call the number. Because one of the interesting things that I learned is that they say that more women than men attempt suicide, and more men than women commit suicide. And the reason is women take less lethal means of committing suicide. They take a bottle of pills, it's a cry for help, but they'll live to see another day. Whereas men pick up a shotgun, blow their brains out, and then everything is done. So if anyone, male, female, is going through anyone, I implore you, please speak to someone, because there are people out there. Call me, ask Sharifa, I don't care. You need somebody to talk to. Now we're down to the last 4 minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Andrea.
Thank you, Sharifa. Well, I'd like to just say that our children are our future. We need to care for them, make them happy, support them. All children deserve to be happy. And each of us has an obligation to work on that and to find ways to do that. It can be any way, but just find a way that's personal to you and do something for one child or more than one child. It's going to make the world better place for all of us and future generations. And so that's my spiel.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Jackson, what do you have for us?
Yeah. So in kind of 1 minute, you know, I'm big on, and with happiness, it's all a lot of theory and everything, but you want to be very practical, right? Because we all know too, that there's a difference between kind of knowing something, you know, intellectually and knowing it intuitively and feeling it in your body. Right. And so, you know, 1 minute exercise you can do to really start to feel the power of some of these practices, or, you know, even social connection, right? I'll tell people, you know, get out your phone. I mean, I can grab mine right here and follow along. If you have to exit the, you know, your Facebook video watching this, don't do it, right? Save it for after. But just go in, and I do this in my programs and people love it. You can spend 10 minutes on it, but even in 30 seconds, just go back into your old pictures. You know, like I'm doing now, try to go back more than, you know, 7-8 months, right? And I find one that just really makes me smile, makes me laugh, right? And there's probably people involved in that. So first, take a few minutes, 10 seconds, whatever, to reflect on that experience, what you're grateful for, and really feel it in your body. You know, put yourself back in that moment. And then what I challenge you to do, and people love this, is just send a message to that person who's involved or those people who were involved in the experience, and just let them know that you're thinking of them. And I promise you, this is kind of how, you know, I think Keith said something earlier, how it's, you know, joy's unlimited bank account, right? This is going to boost your happiness, their happiness, get you in gratitude, social connection, and start to, you know, get a taste for how these practices can really change our lives, you know, in practice, tangible. So that's my challenge to you. And this is over. Take 2 minutes and have a great day.
I love that. Wonderful idea. Got about 60 seconds left. Brian, what do you have for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just build on Jackson's list right there, because, you know, in my book, I give several tips and things you can do every day. And they're very simple, very practical. The mantra of positive psychology is begin and end the day with gratitude. And so I challenge people, when you wake up in the morning, brushing your teeth, think of 3 things that you're grateful for. And when you put your head on the pillow that night, think of 3 things that positive that either happened that day or things you're looking forward to the next day. Also, people need to weed their garden. And what I mean by that is remove people from your life that do not serve you. Where I'm talking about the negative Nancys and the Dougie Downers. You don't have to fix them. Evaluate whether they actually contribute to their life. Sometimes we can't get away from those people. They're family members. So we need to be able to manage difficult people sometimes. And Keith is going to like my last tip, which is celebrate more. You can hire Keith to do a big bash for you, or you can just go out and have a drink with a coworker or something at the end of the day and just celebrate something right that happened that day. If we do that more, we'll be much more happier.
Absolutely. And I am grateful to have all of you here. I'm grateful for Brian, for Jackson, for Andrea, and grateful to hear what Keith has to say.
Oh, sorry. I was like worried that we were running out of time.
We are, but it's okay.
Okay, good. I was going to say, do not underestimate the stress that comes with doing a wedding. Get a planner or a professional, do a consultation. You know, the moment that you say yes to somebody, you get asked and you say yes, it is important to do the research and to understand what you are about to get into. Don't compare yourself to other people. Find a budget, stick to the budget. Don't, please, please do not depend on credit cards. If I see another person put a wedding on a credit card at 22% interest, that wedding is not your wedding. You shouldn't be doing that wedding. You know, budgets are important. Money is important. Have those conversations early on so that way you can get back to the joy of planning as you get closer to the wedding date. But I implore you, please, please get a planner or another professional, even if it's a consultation. An hour consultation will go a really long way to prepping you on how to be as joyous as possible throughout the planning process. And again, if you are in starting to wedding plan, join us every Tuesday at 2 for Behind the Veil. We talk to wedding professionals and you may just pick up some insights. And we're now a podcast. Hello.
Yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. I want to thank you all for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you are not important. We still need your support. Please go ahead and share the show and also visit our guests. Their information is in the Facebook post. Visit their websites, follow them on social media, send them a message. And when you reach out to them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. And if you're interested in being a guest, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to the New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you're looking for more ways I can help you with your business, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.